This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 21st of January, 2022. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Frieda Bates.
Hello.
Sue Gannaway, Angela Ling, Jane Thomas and Val Hoskins have edited the extracts this week. And so we'll begin with the regular notices. The first is to say that if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with recording, please ring the contact number on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, please make sure it's plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. And now let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Doubt over road closure. Winchester actor made national charity ambassador. Archbishop of Canterbury pays visit to cathedral. And the first headline story, Daphne, please.
Doubt over road closure. Long-mooted and controversial plans to close a major Winchester route could be altered to allow use by park and ride buses. Andover Road is set to be closed, with traffic rerouted through the Kings Barton Estate via Winchester Avenue. The proposed closure is unpopular with many, and campaigners have been lobbying to retain the route, which takes traffic into and out of the centre to the north. As part of the Winchester Movement strategy proposal, it is suggested that bus access for the proposed new Northern Park and Ride on the Andover Road corridor could be maintained alongside the proposed walking and cycling route. But if this were to go ahead, Kings Barton Estate developer Calla Homes would have to submit a variation to the planning permission and would require a redesign of the Andover Road Harestock Road junction. At a meeting of Winchester City Council last Wednesday, Kingsworthy Parish Councillor Sina Biddle asked whether the developer has been asked to submit a variation. Councillor Martin Todd, Cabinet Member for Economic Recovery, said, "A planning application to revise the design of the Northern Kings Barton Junction cannot practically happen until Hampshire County Council and Calla Homes have agreed on a new design for that junction. And that is not currently the case. A junction design that is opposed by Hampshire County Council will not be approved. A junction design that is not supported by Calla Homes will not be built, since they have full and irrevocable permission granted by the Secretary of State to build the currently approved junction design, should they wish to do so. We continue to pressure both parties to come to an agreement on the earliest possible timing." He continued, "In the unlikely event that neither party submits a planning application following an agreement to a new junction design, we will be more than happy to ask the parties involved to do so." Councillor Todd said the currently agreed design is no longer consistent with modern standards. He continued, The Northern Park and Ride remains a critical priority to cut city centre traffic and pollution by encouraging people travelling to Winchester from the north to switch to park and ride buses to access the city centre. Given Calla's irrevocable right to build the current junction design, any change will need their consent. Councillor Biddle asked whether it would be possible to keep Andover Road North open to all traffic, not just to the buses, as well as Winchester Avenue, if an application to vary the plans was submitted. Councillor Todd suggested she contact the County Council, as it is leading on the design work. John Richards, Land and Planning Director at Calla Homes, said, "The Winchester Movement strategy is out for consultation until February the 11th, to which Calla will be submitting representations. But it is premature to conclude how the consultation responses will be taken into account as Hampshire develop the strategy further." The issue was discussed at the King's Barton Forum on Tuesday, with Councillor Kelsey Lerney asking how having buses on an otherwise no-through Andover Road would square with its use as a cycle and pedestrian route. Andover Road is due to be closed to through traffic on the completion of the 650th house in King's Barton, due in summer 2025.
Winchester actor made national charity ambassador. A Winchester actor has been announced as the latest ambassador for a UK learning disability charity. Tommy Jessop, 36, hit the headlines last year playing Terry Boyle in the hit show Line of Duty. And now Mencap has announced him as their newest ambassador. He was the first actor with Down syndrome to star in a primetime BBC drama, playing Ben in Mark Haddon's BAFTA-nominated Coming Down the Mountain. Following this with guest lead roles in Casualty, Holby City and other TV roles and radio plays for BBC Radio 4. Tommy is the winner of various Best Actor awards for his short films and also the first professional actor with Down syndrome to tour theatres as Hamlet, and the first to become a full voting member of BAFTA. In July 2021, Jessop received an honorary Doctorate of Arts from the University of Winchester for his services to the entertainment industry. Tommy plans to use his new position as Mencap Ambassador to get rid of the common perception that people with a learning disability cannot do certain things. Speaking of his new role, Tommy said, "People with a learning disability should be able to do anything we want. For example, getting married or being a role model for people to look up to. I am proud and honoured to be a Mencap ambassador. I hope, through this role, I can help Mencap keep doing what they do best to carry on their really hard work in the future." Adele Harris, Mencap Chief Executive, said, "We are delighted to welcome Tommy Jessop as our ambassador. Like the rest of the nation, I was gripped by the last season of Line of Duty and was delighted to see someone who has Down syndrome on such a popular and primetime TV show. It's incredibly important because representation really does matter, and I'm thrilled he's joined the Mencap family. Having Tommy on board as an ambassador is a great way to destigmatise and challenge misconceptions about people who have Down syndrome and or who have a learning disability. He will also help us increase the visibility of people with a learning disability across the media and society to help transform attitudes. Our vision is for the UK to be the best place in the world to live a happy and healthy life if you have a learning disability, and I look forward to working alongside Tommy to make this vision a reality." Tommy's parents started the Winchester theatre company Blue Apple Theatre for people with learning disabilities. The theatre gives opportunities in performing and develop theatre, dance and film productions that are performed within a variety of large and small-scale public venues. Currently, they are offering online classes for 14 to 18-year-olds. And this piece is accompanied by a photograph of Tommy at a graduation ceremony, looking very happy with his university gown and cap on. A big, broad grin on his face.
Archbishop of Canterbury pays a visit to cathedral. The Archbishop of Canterbury, the Most Reverend Justin Welby, paid a pastoral visit to Winchester Cathedral on Sunday. In addition to presiding over the Eucharist service and preaching the sermon, Archbishop Welby performed a short ceremony with the bishops of Southampton and Basingstoke, the Right Reverend Debbie Selin and the Right Reverend David Williams, and two other associate bishops, which represented a reaffirmation of commitment to their work in the Winchester Diocese. The Archbishop also officiated at a ceremony with the Friends of Winchester Cathedral, when their chairman, Bruce Parker, laid a wreath at the foot of the Duke of Connaught's memorial in the North Aisle. The Duke of Connaught, Queen Victoria's third son, was the first royal patron of the Cathedral Friends, and last Sunday was the 80th anniversary of his death in 1942. The Queen is the present royal patron of the Friends and last year sent a congratulatory message to them on their 90th anniversary. Archbishop Welby said, "I am very grateful to Bishop Debbie, Bishop David and Bishop Richard for the dedicated ministry they are already providing in the diocese, and the whole people of God for your faithfulness and heart for God's mission." Bishop David added, "I believe that we can begin 2022 with optimism and confidence about our future together in the Diocese of Winchester, and thank the Archbishop for the trust and responsibility he has given us." Now, there are three pictures. First of all, the Archbishop alone in the pulpit preaching. Then a more distant one showing the Archbishop in the pulpit and the big screen, which is helpful to people who are not close up, and a lot of people looking up to him as he preaches. And finally, the Archbishop with the two suffragans of Winchester Diocese.
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Daphne will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Green, Elsie, née Bone, passed away peacefully on the 6th of January 2022, aged 82 years. Hall, Vera May, formerly of Hyde, passed away peacefully at Brendon Care Nursing Home on the 7th of January 2022, aged 100 years. Harvey, Susan Jennifer, passed away peacefully at home on Wednesday the 29th of December 2021. Hollier, John, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice on 10th of January 2022, aged 92 years. May, John Edward, passed away in hospital on the 6th of January 2022, aged 89. Peters, Ivan, born Redruth 1938, sadly passed away 8th of January 2022 at Woodpeckers Nursing Home, Brockenhurst, after a long illness. Pridmore, Michael, sadly passed away on the 6th of January 2022, aged 92 years. Rawlings, Victor Frederick, Pops. Victor Frederick Rawlings died on the 13th of January 2022, peacefully aged 85 in Newquay, West Wales, where he had lived for the past 32 years. Liz Tatham is the author of this week's Christian comment. It's headed Reflection of Light in Darkness. Thank you, Daphne.
How was your Christmas, New Year, and that in-between time when we live in a bubble, life not back to normal yet, but the height of Christmas celebrations are over? In that time, in my church, and with many other Christians, we celebrated the Feast of the Holy Family. That small family of three, probably wondering what had happened to them and what life ahead held for them over the years. In images of cribs, we see Mary kneeling by her baby, often in a prayerful posture, and Joseph looking on. On that Sunday service, we were singing a hymn with the words, "Radiant light in our darkness," in one of the lines. As I sang it, I shivered and felt one of those moments when God's Spirit touches deep in our being. I imagined and could see the brightest and largest of all stars shining like a diamond in the black night sky, radiating light to all it touched. Like many of you reading this, I have experienced darkness, times when I thought life could never be the same again and it would always be dark. I learnt in the worst of those times that trying to climb out of the dark hole in my own strength was futile. I needed the encouragement and help of friends and family, but also that vision of the light that is God to reach towards. Christmas brought God in human form, and so Jesus becomes a friend and companion on the journey. He is the light that radiates in darkness and gives us the knowledge that all will be well in its own time. As I write this on a Monday morning in mid-January, life really back to normal now and the church in ordinary time, I'm trying to shake off the midwinter sinking feeling of wondering what next. What is to look forward to? It's too early for summer holidays and barbecues, but I can see the bulbs that we planted just a few months ago popping up. I noticed that it was still light just before 5 o'clock yesterday, so the longer hours of daylight are coming. I am thinking of a couple of good friends who live alone and are growing older and I haven't heard from in a few weeks. I will contact them this morning and see if they would like to meet up and ask how they are. Across the room are some hyacinths some friends brought yesterday to visit me as I convalesce from some minor surgery. And it reminds me too of the kindness and care of hospital staff, still good-humoured after all they have been through and still have to deal with. So I will be a reflection of that light in the darkness as I reach out to others and will accept the light others offer me. They may not know that they are giving or receiving the light of Christ, but he knows and I know. I hope you will experience that radiant light in your daily life in small and perhaps big ways, and that you will let God touch you deep within.
Thank you. Now, there's not many letters this week, and they all seem rather grumpy, but here goes. Nick, can you start us off with the party line, please?
Yes, this one's from Martin Holmes. Sir, Mr. Brine and Mrs. Drummond have expressed their concerns about the latest episode in the long-running tale of Downing Street Party Folk, chronicled January 13th. Mr. Brine is furious at the handling of the latest revelations, and Mrs. Drummond is disappointed to hear the Prime Minister's belated admission and shares the concerns of the public. But both indicate that they will wait for the report being undertaken at the Prime Minister's request, essentially into his own conduct and that of his close staff, before commenting further. But what do we need to wait for? Evidence of more parties? This is coming thick and fast. More details of those parties, information about which has gradually emerged through leaks and belated admissions of involvement? The public have had enough. The simple fact is that a succession of parties took place both indoors and outdoors, in and around the Prime Minister's relatively small official residence at a time when the rest of us were subject to stringent lockdown rules and penalties if we broke them. Some of Johnson's supporters have praised him for his admission and apology. But the former was a long time coming, and the latter so out of character it looked like the action of a desperate person. Mr. Brine, who rightly describes the unfolding events as indefensible, complains that this is a huge distraction. The real issue is that Johnson is distraction prone. When it is not parties, it is the refurbishment of the Downing Street flat, or the credulity-defying defence of the behaviour of a minister or special adviser. The country desperately needs a Prime Minister that the public can trust to focus on the pressing matters of the moment, of which there are many, including, as Mr. Brine says, the cost of living crisis, but also the continuing failure of the government to take seriously the pollution of our rivers and waterways, which you highlighted recently. In the short term, it is up to Mr. Brine and Mrs. Drummond and their parliamentary colleagues to press for change. Hand-wringing and equivocation are not enough. And that one is from Martin Holmes, Culverwell Gardens, Winchester.
Blue and yellow. Sir, thank you for your recent article on the Liberal Democrats' ambition to turn the blue wall yellow in the wake of the Shropshire North by-election, Chronicle January the 6th. Your piece was very informative, but I do feel that it could have examined the Lib Dems' assertions more critically. Ed Davey may well describe his party as the only credible challengers to the Conservatives, but the polls tell a very different story. Last month, Focal Data surveyed the voting intention of 25,000 people on a constituency-by-constituency basis for the Sunday Times. It found that the Lib Dems would only win 11 seats, the same as 2019. Not a single brick of the blue wall turned yellow. Winchester showed up as a Conservative hold. The reason for this is governing competence. The Lib Dems' promise to cancel Brexit in the 2019 general election proved catastrophic for their credibility. Voters knew that the policy would never work and that it was irresponsible for the party to even propose it. 2 years on, the Lib Dems have struggled to put that debacle behind them. They have a new leader, but their policies are old hat. They remain committed to regaining EU membership and have failed to produce a coherent plan for the economy, for education, or for migration. Winchester stayed blue in 2019 because voters recognised that the Conservatives had the best plan for jobs, for hospitals, and for schools. Last month's polling proves this still to be true. Moreover, I have every reason to believe that this same reputation for competent, efficient and responsible government will bring the Conservatives new successes at the City Council elections this May. And that letter comes from Leo Kay, St Cross Road, Winchester.
Mistakes again. Sir, I wrote to you in November about the need for the public sector to have a sufficient corporate brain to be able to function effectively, both in providing services and outsourcing these. There is a need to have enough people with the relevant experience and expertise. The unfolding debacle on River Park has demonstrated all too clearly the concern I was raising in relation to Winchester City Council. Whatever your view on the proposed deal with Southampton University and whether the site should remain as public land, it is fundamental to get the procedures right, otherwise the council risks a judicial review. This was the case here, meaning that the original cabinet decision needs to be rescinded. If this was a one-off occurrence, it would just be viewed as unfortunate. But this keeps happening, especially on the council's own schemes. By way of examples, since the current administration took over, the station approach planning permission had to be revoked following a judicial review challenge on procedural irregularities. That site still languishes as a result. This happened again on the Vault-X site, where the council had to start again with a fresh planning application. However, there has been no rethink of approach, no resignation by cabinet members, no change in consultants, notwithstanding the issues. It would seem that there is not the corporate brain to learn from the mistakes. This is a particular concern as the administration is proposing to start a process to find a developer for the Central Winchester regeneration site. It has chosen a procurement method which could be too expensive for many potential partners. Furthermore, by not having any master plan, the process is already attracting the wrath of the sort of people who have in the past threatened or brought judicial reviews. Given the council's track record, it would seem reasonable to expect that this will put off other potential applicants. It would therefore seem sensible to take a different course, ensuring that the council has the right expertise to progress and does so in a manner which builds consensus rather than invites challenge. And that comes from Hugh Lumby, Meon Valley Division, Hampshire County Council, and Upper Meon Valley Ward, Winchester City Council.
Shameful night. Sir, another shameful night is the only way to describe the full council meeting last week, as Silver Hill was put on the same disastrous trajectory as the previous Henderson efforts. The decision was made by the de facto leader of the council, Kelsey Learney, with the rest of the Lib Dem group, bar a few brave souls, pushing it through on a wave of misconception. It was on her watch in 2010, when Councillor Learney was actually the leader, that Henderson was allowed to take over the project from Thornfield. Had the council been more intelligent, it would have taken control itself and waited for the recession to unravel. Kelsey Learney is not alone in her offence, and much of the blame for the mess to come rests with the chief executive, Laura Taylor. It was Miss Taylor and her ex-Basingstoke council officer chums who changed the team and dumped JTP in favour of JLL. Whereas JTP are a firm of architects and planners who worked hard to gain the trust of residents in the production of the Supplementary Planning Document, SPD, JLL are estate agents who, in my view, has subverted the SPD and produced nothing of worth in return for a PPE contract in fees. It is the persistent dissembling that destroys confidence. The council has eschewed the normal straightforward process of commissioning a master plan because, it says, it doesn't have the skills. At the same time, it asserts that it does have the skills to direct and control the far more nuanced ongoing relationship with the development partner. No, it doesn't. And it's as good as certain that the council will roll over to the city's detriment on every issue as they arise. The Chronicle was right to say in its leader, Chronicle January the 13th, that it's time the council learnt from court challenges. Because it clearly hasn't learnt that council business needs to be conducted in a trustworthy and lawful way. Nor has the council, as represented by councillors Lernie Thompson and Laura Taylor, learned anything from the history of Silver Hill, the failure of which they seem determined to repeat. And that is from Kim A. Gottlieb of East Stratton.
One of the worst employers around. Sir, I was a postman working in the Highlands of Scotland for 4 years, 20 years ago. Royal Mail has to be one of the worst employers around. The turnover of staff is unbelievable. Why? Royal Mail is run by individuals who have never delivered a letter in their life. The delays experienced now cannot just be blamed on COVID. This has obviously added to the problem. Royal Mail is more about profit, as we have found with many privatised companies, than care of its own staff. I recall it was an offence to hold up the Queen's post, but yet here we have the organisation responsible for our mail doing exactly that. And that letter is from David Brown, The Hallway, Littleton.
Work together. Sir, now that the old year has passed, and let's be honest, it's been a horrific year, but we as human beings are resilient because we have to be. We have to think of the future. And I honestly believe that here in Winchester we need to take the step forward and finish what we've started. The projects that have not come into fruition, just to name a few, are Station Approach, St Maurice's Covert, the Central Winchester Regeneration and the Cattle Market on Andover Road. I understand that the regeneration has to have professional people, of which at the moment the City Council have not got enough officers who have the knowledge and expertise. Let's be honest, it doesn't matter what party you come from, and your intentions are honourable, but when it comes to development on any level, whatever that might be, you need the best brains that you can get. Without being biased, it's not always preferable for developers to have the final say. You definitely need the expertise of the professionals. I can understand the hesitation that is happening and that many surveys have gone out to get the feel of what people are thinking or their opinions. But if you're not sure of what's being put forward, because councillors, no matter how dedicated they are not qualified. Winchester deserves to come forward. At the moment, things are looking pretty grim. Could we collectively, no matter who you are, who you support, make a New Year's resolution to put Winchester City itself first and the people first, forget about politics, work together. Otherwise, I don't see how we can go forward. That comes from Eileen Berry, Priors Dean Road, Hairstock.
If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or email news at hampshirechronicle, all one word, .co.uk, or you could write an old-style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we'll continue with Chronicle Comment, First Person and Belgarum. Right, the editor heads up his article this week with Buses on a Closed Andover Road. Funny how the world works. Several years ago, Carla Holmes tweaked its plans for the Barton Farm development, now known as King's Barton. Andover Road would be closed and diverted through King's Barton to give a bit more vitality to what otherwise would have been a huge cul-de-sac, like Whiteley. The idea was highly unpopular with many, adding to journey times and taking a major road through a residential area. But the plans were approved, and since then calls for Andover Road to be kept open have been knocked back with the mantra, planning permission has been given. Except that it now transpires that it is not set in stone. As we report on the front page, civic chiefs are now looking at keeping it open for buses that will serve the new park and ride that is proposed for North Winchester, with Sir John Moore Barracks a potential site, although others are being considered too. It will certainly hasten journey time between the park and ride and the city centre, but what about the impact on cycling and walking that the Winchester Movement strategy is designed to promote? The devil will be in the detail. Now, Kimberly Barber writes about crocodiles and COVID. Nick will tell us more.
Crocodiles. Aggressive, unpredictable beasts that don't like being manhandled. When I was young, my mum and stepdad at the time took me on the trip of a lifetime to Florida. We did the usual tourist sights, and I remember seeing these beasts lurking in the background. I have a hazy memory of someone wrestling one. It may have been my overactive 10-year-old imagination, or perhaps I've confused it with a scene from a TV show. Either way, in my mind, it was a battle. A struggle, limbs flying everywhere, water splashing about, jaws snapping, the beast lurching and lashing out, while the guy used all his might to keep it under control. He did, and we were fine, having watched a tourist spectacle. But fast forward a few decades, and I found myself replaying that scene in my own living room. On Friday evening, nestled among the slightly crumpled learn-to-read books and the phonic photocopies in my son's school book bag, was a note from his wonderful headmaster. We strongly recommend you use the weekend as an opportunity to test your family for COVID, as we have seen 29 cases today, it said. For context, my son goes to a two-form primary school in the Meon Valley, so 29 cases is a lot. Lateral flow tests may be a simple task for the average adult. A cotton bud down the throat until you gag, and a whiz up each nostril until you wince, dip it in the liquid and wait, and pray for no second line to appear. Simple. Now, if anyone has ever tried convincing a four-year-old to do something that they would rather not, then you'll begin to understand my predicament. After all bribery had been refused, I will let you watch whatever you want on telly, and I'll let you have sweets and chocolate after. And all reassurance had been rebuffed. It won't hurt, and it will be real quick, I promise, and it's just a teeny tiny tickle. The only tactic left was the crocodile wrestling. Lassen is being watched by his younger sister, who adores her brother and copies his every move, so by her turn, it's even worse. She may only be 2 years old, and is the smallest person in our family, but she's certainly the strongest willed, and there's no way a swab is going up her nostril if she doesn't want it to. A huge standoff occurs. The neighbours must have thought all hell was breaking loose. However, several tears, shouts and wails later, and that was just me, the swabs were eventually taken. A few snapped and a few more were thrown or grabbed and rendered useless. They really should supply extra per test. And we were on to the home chemistry lesson. We dipped them into the magic liquid. I bat away little hands with lightning reflexes. Please don't let us fail now. Pour onto the test and wait. No extra red lines for us today. We have swerved another COVID bullet. We live to fight another day. Our freedom continues. We may all have runny noses, coughs and sneezes, but we haven't got coronavirus. We can breathe a sigh of relief into our elbows and continue about our normal routine. The kids can go to school and nursery, and Mummy and Daddy can continue to work. Never before in history has anyone been so happy about the mundane being able to continue. My question is, as we are nearly 2 years into this COVID business, isn't it about time that we found a better way to test our young? One cruise ship I visited, I was asked to hack up 2 millilitres of spit into a test tube, which they whisked off and tested. It was far from pleasant, especially in front of other people, but then neither is a public gagging. Testing is so important right now to help us to get a handle on the spread of the infection. I just plead with the science boffins out there. Please find a way to test that doesn't involve wrestling a crocodile or two in your living room. Millions of parents of young children need your help.
A couple of lighter moments from Bulgarum this week. Frida, please tell us more.
An alternative look at the news. The first headline is When Doogie Met Diana. The wonderful photograph, which I'll tell you about in a minute. Winchester civic chiefs rightly paid tribute to Councillor Linda Murphy, who died recently. The council has a policy of announcing the deaths of former councillors, so it was surprising that the passing of Doogie Coville was not mentioned at the council meeting last week. He died last month, aged 101. Major Coville served in the Second World War, winning the Distinguished Conduct Medal and later becoming an MBE. The Chronicle covered his 100th birthday last year. He was mayor in 1987 and 88, and as the photo shows, hosted the visit of Princess Diana to the city during his mayoralty. The photograph was taken on the steps of the Guildhall. Major Coville is front right. Behind him on the steps, there are two men in military uniforms of some kind, and between them is Princess Diana looking her usual elegant, smiley self. The second item is headed, Is the Supreme Leader of North Korea interested in a house in Shawford? If only it were true. Spotted on the Winchester City Council website planning pages was an objection to a proposal for a house in Crossway, Shawford. One objector, Mr. Kim Jong-un of Pyongyang, states, This house is not nice, and my objection is strong. In my country, we would build big tower blocks to house 1,000 people. Should the application go to the planning committee, would the supreme leader of the People's Republic of North Korea turn up to object in person? On a serious note, shouldn't the city council staff be weeding out these bogus objections?
Thank you, Frida. Right, we still don't have the historical items, much missed. But we have got a few items of what's on over the region in the next couple of weeks. We've got a music gig taking place in church at St Mary's Church at Twyford. That's Sarah McQuaid. This is on February the 10th with the doors open at 7:30. Now, a bit about her. Her solo album, The Burian Sessions, was recorded and filmed the beautiful medieval church of St Burian, not far from Sarah's home in West Cornwall. It features stunning solo performances by Sarah on acoustic and electric guitars, piano and floor tom drum, her lush distinctive vocals echoing through the soaring space. And tickets for that event at Twyford cost £12 and are available online from We Got Tickets. Mitchell Dover, Sutton Scotney and South Wanston, a new group encouraging the Mitchell Dover community to make changes to tackle climate change will launch next month. On February the 1st, a launch event for Greening Mitchell Dever will take place at Northbrook Hall between 6pm and 8pm. All are welcome to attend. And, oh, here, this is fun. This Burns Night, the Gurkha Museum in Winchester is inviting people to get their kilts on and enjoy a night of bagpipes, whisky and fabulous Scottish-themed food. Gurkhas have a long history and affiliation with Scotland and Scottish regiments. This month, the night will celebrate the relationship with a fantastic Burns night in the Gurkha Museum in Winchester. There's drinks and whiskies and a fabulous three-course meal with a Nepalese twist. That sounds nice. Tickets are priced at £55 and will also include a half bottle of wine or a bottle of Gurkha beer per person with dinner. And tickets can be purchased online at www.thegurkhamuseum.co.uk or by calling 01962 842 832. Now, here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 21st of January, the sun will set at 4:38pm, and on Wednesday the 26th of January, the sun will rise at 7:51am and will set at 4:45pm. And now we're on to items of general news. Daphne, would you like to kick us off, please?
Right. And this item's headed, Kimberley takes on role of editor. A new editor has taken over at the Hampshire Chronicle, and she promises to breathe fresh life into the long-standing local newspaper. Kimberley Barber joined NewsQuest, the company which owns the Chronicle and hundreds of other local news titles across the country, in December. Kimberley, who lives in Swanmore, was previously the business editor at The News, Portsmouth's daily newspaper. After a decade in her previous job, the mum of two felt that it was time to take a step forward in her career. She said, "It's every reporter's dream to become the editor of their local newspaper. When I saw the role advertised, I knew it was the right role for me. Not only am I proud to take on such responsibility, but I am also proud to be able to represent my community on the issues that matter most. I am also proud to take on a newspaper that has been part of its community for 250 years. Over the years, the Hampshire Chronicle has been a voice for countless people and groups. it's championed Winchester and it's held the powerful to account. I intend to continue in its long-standing traditions, as well as enhancing the newspaper's offer online and on social media. Kimberly, 38, studied BA Honours Journalism at Southampton Solent University after completing a higher national diploma in media production at Highbury College in Portsmouth. Kimberly will be based at the Hampshire Chronicle's office in Upper Brook Street, Winchester. She also has responsibility for the Romsey Advertiser, Basingstoke Gazette and Andover Advertiser. Kimberly has taken over from Bill Brown, who retired in December after 45 years. Andrew Napier will remain as the Hampshire Chronicle's head of news, with reporters Toby Oliver and Harvey Lindsay. Reporter Frankie Rudland is due to join the team on January the 28th, transferring from NewsQuest-owned Worcester News. Senior reporter Sophie Day will be moving from the Chronicle to take on the role of head of news at the Basingstoke Gazette on January the 24th. Kimberly said, "I appreciate that with any change in a business there will be a short period of uncertainty while everyone settles in. But I am confident that these changes will be for the best. I thank the loyal readers of the Chronicle for their patience, and I welcome any feedback on what they would like to see done differently. To contact Kimberly, email kimberly.barber@newsquestco.uk or call 07468701702.
Ambulance call-outs top more than 1,500. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance responded to more than 1,500 potentially life-saving call-outs in 2021. Charity attended 1,570 missions throughout the year and even flew its 10,000th patient to hospital. Cardiac arrests were the most common incidents, closely followed by medical emergencies such as strokes, road traffic collisions, and falls from height. Charity CEO Richard Corbett said, "2021 was immensely challenging, but for our patients and their families, it was potentially life-changing. We are so grateful to all our supporters for allowing us to be there for the people who needed our help last year." And that piece is accompanied by a picture of a lovely green and yellow helicopter.
Arm shop builds pool to boost its water supply. A Meon Valley farm shop has invested £20,000 into a water reservoir holding the same amount of water as an Olympic-sized swimming pool. The reservoir stores winter rainwater, which will be used to help grow its soft fruit during the summer and to reduce the pressure on local water supplies. Westlands Farm Shop near Wickham has constructed the reservoir to provide water for its strawberries and raspberries during the summer months. The soft fruit is grown in polytunnels at the farm in Bishop's Waltham. The family-run farm moved 3,000 tonnes of soil around to create the water feature and the fenced-off area to protect the wildlife that surrounds it. It collects rainwater from cattle shed roofs and polytunnels on the farm to water its crops even during the hottest of summer. With such a large capacity, Westlands Farm Shop will be able to grow an extra 65 tonnes of strawberries during 2022. They will be able to offer more locally grown produce and encourage the reduction of food miles within the local community. Previously, the farm collected water from cattle shed roofs, which was stored in a purpose-built tank. However, the capacity was too small, and the farm was left relying on the water mains during hotter periods, which was putting additional pressure on the local water supply network. Graham Collett, farm and farm shop owner, said, "Sustainability is at the heart of everything that we do, so we wanted to find a way that we could recycle the rainwater we get throughout the winter months." Excuse me. Now, this piece is accompanied by a photograph of Graham standing beside the reservoir, which is square in shape, and lined with a simply colossal liner. That must have been where most of the £20,000 went, I should think.
Future of diocese as bishop retires. The Archbishop of Canterbury has written to the people of the Diocese of Winchester confirming arrangements following the Bishop of Winchester's retirement. The Right Reverend Dr. Tim Dakin will officially retire on February the 6th, having announced his departure last year. In May, he announced that he was stepping back. Many church people were unhappy at Bishop Tim's management style over the last decade. It has seen an emphasis on mission work whilst cutting back traditional village posts. Since the announcement, the Bishop of Southampton, Debbie Sellin, has been the acting bishop and will continue to do so during the vacancy. The Archbishop has said that Bishop Debbie will work closely with Bishop David Williams and with the senior staff team to provide collegial oversight to the people of God in the Winchester Diocese. Bishop Debbie's role will involve leading the senior leadership team and ensuring good working relationships, working with Bishop David in promoting clergy morale and well-being, ensuring that governance structures are fit for purpose, and that the diocese is confident in financial sustainability, building on the diocesan vision for growth, and preparing the way for a successful appointment of the new Bishop of Winchester. The letter also states that Bishop Richard Frith, who has been providing some support to diocesan leadership in recent months, has been asked to take up a more formalised role as the Archbishop's Episcopal Commissionary in the Diocese of Winchester. His role will be to work closely with Bishop Debbie as acting bishop and with Bishop David to work alongside the senior staff team and the church as a whole in helping the diocese to move forward from the sad events of the recent past, to enable a process of reconciliation and healing, and to recover confidence and joy in the service of Christ. Bishop Richard will provide, on behalf of the Archbishop of Canterbury, oversight of the process of Winchester moving towards the nomination of its next bishop, the formal process for which is anticipated to begin towards the end of 2022. Archbishop Justin says, "I am very grateful to Bishop Debbie, Bishop David and Bishop Richard for the dedicated ministry they are already providing in the diocese and to the whole people of God for your faithfulness and heart for God's mission." Bishop Debbie says, "After such a difficult 2021 for so many, we hope and pray that we may start to see signs of light in the fight against the pandemic. I pray that as a diocese, we will continue to make progress on our journey of reconciliation together, and I am grateful for the arrangements the Archbishop has put in place. I am particularly thankful for the support and prayers of everyone across the diocese. Your tireless work ministering to your parishes, your communities, and what you do to help one another remains a great source of strength and inspiration to me."
Concern as city pub hires anti-vax singer. Concerns have been raised after a popular Winchester pub played host to a band with a member who is outspoken with his views on COVID. Joe Ward, who is part of the Jays, played the Baker's Arms on Saturday, January the 8th. The musician and DJ has publicly posted many times about his scepticism of the vaccination programme and the need to carry out COVID tests and isolate. However, his latest gig has prompted upset from some Winchester residents. One, who did not wish to be named, said she was concerned about his appearance. She said, "How very strange that a national pub chain, which has been massively affected due to COVID restrictions and promote a safe and secure COVID environment in their pubs, would allow one of their pubs in Winchester to have a party with him as their DJ. So sad to see that whilst we are trying to regain some normality, that others play with our futures. Fine to have your own opinions, but risking other people without informing them of vax status of the entertainment makes a mockery of it all." The Baker's Arms in High Street, which is run by Stonegate Group, defended the decision to hire the act. A spokesperson said, "We fully adhere to government guidelines in providing a safe environment and have a number of measures in place to protect staff and customers. Musicians and entertainers are not required to provide proof of vaccination for performances. However, we continue to urge all those visiting or working at the pub to act responsibly in protecting their own health and that of others." The manager said that she makes all staff do a lateral flow test on the day of the event. However, Joe, who is not vaccinated against COVID-19, said he would only take a test if it was made law. He said, "Although the situation hasn't arisen anywhere I've performed yet, if it was between a vaccine passport or a test, I would be willing to provide a test, if and only if it was set into law, which it hasn't been yet. Although I want to stress that I haven't been asked at any pub, club, venue or festival that I've performed at so far, and will refuse it until it is necessary, as I stated above." It isn't the first time the Jays have performed at the pub either, playing several gigs since restrictions were lifted. Joe, from Fareham, defended his beliefs and said that he will continue to provide entertainment. He said, "I believe in free choice when it comes to health, especially when it comes to my and our children's health." The piece is accompanied by a picture of Joe Ward by his microphone wearing shades.
Exotic. No notice published on leisure centre land disposal. Uncertainty surrounds the future of Winchester's redundant leisure centre site after the City Council acknowledged its unlawfulness in leasing the land. As previously reported, Winchester City Council conceded that it should have given the public notice of plans to hand over the publicly owned River Park Leisure Centre, further referred to as RPLC in this article, the River Park Leisure Centre site to the University of Southampton in order for objections to be considered. The revelation followed campaign group Friends of River Park telling the council that it was seeking a judicial review over the lease. The Chronicle reported the issue and was told by the authority that a notice had been published in this paper regarding the RPLC site. Despite this, the only notice published in both the Chronicle and on the Council's own notices section on its website is regarding the Riverside Bowls Club and Skate Park, both of which neighbour the RPLC site. The notice reads that the Council is proposing to enter into an agreement to grant a lease for a term of 150 years to the university, adding, The lease will contain terms requiring the university to continue the current use of the land unless an equivalent alternative facility is provided. At the time of publication, it appears that the council has not yet issued a notice detailing the disposal of the leisure centre land as was promised. The council was asked to clarify when a notice would be published regarding the RPLC site, but it has yet to respond. The public have until the 4th of February to comment on the current disposal notice, and the Friends of River Park hope that any objections will deter the council from pressing ahead with these plans. Conservative group leader on the City Council, Councillor Caroline Horrell, said, "The decision by the Liberal administration not to consult with councillors or residents before agreeing a deal with the University of Southampton for River Park is a dereliction of their duty and completely undermines local democracy. This also includes the legal requirement to provide the public notice regarding the land. It is an indicator of how far they are removed from the mood of residents. It also indicates a complete lack of transparency and is a shocking disregard for the opinion of residents and those legitimately elected to represent wards across the district. The plan to lease the RPLC site to the university was announced last November to allow the education provider to expand the School of Arts campus. Winchester residents aired frustration about the level of public consultation."
And now an item which is also connected to the River Park Leisure Centre, the old one. Lido campaigners have been told to fundraise for the facility and find a suitable location, as the City Council says it cannot afford the provision. A petition containing 2,716 signatures was handed to Winchester City Council at a meeting on Wednesday last week. In total, the petition, both online and on paper, gained 3,024 signatures. Campaigners have urged the authority to support the creation of the outdoor swimming pool in Winchester, particularly on the site of the River Park Leisure Centre, or as part of plans to transform North Walls Park. Lucy Taylor, who started the petition, said the response has been extraordinary and the idea has really captured people's imaginations. She continued, "As Deborah Aden of the People's Pool Campaign in Liverpool says, in terms of economic recovery and public health, Lidos feel like the perfect post-pandemic project. They are community-building hubs. They create cohesion, they build connection, they foster both physical and mental well-being, and they create joy and fun, all things that we really need in this post-pandemic recovery. They are inclusive. It would be a place for young adults to be, for teenage girls to dwell, a population who are drastically underserved in our community, and also a place for families to be together. We believe that River Park is the best location for this because it is integrated with other leisure facilities. It's already a setting where people exercise. The land belongs to the citizens of Winchester and is for the purpose of public recreation, and it's a much-loved community resource." Ms. Taylor urged the council to give campaigners a fair chance to hear about the detailed proposal. In response, council leader Lucille Thompson said, "I would certainly welcome the chance to explore how we could expand opportunities for open water swimming in and around the district. However, you seem to be very fixated on the former leisure centre site, or North Walls Park, and seem to be unaware of the fact that this is in the floodplain. Of course, just because the council cannot afford to invest in such facilities doesn't mean that you, the petitioners, cannot go ahead and raise funds to build your own Lido and find a suitable site. The council is willing to engage with you to explore options for open water swimming in the future, but I am really sorry we just cannot fund it. Councillor Thompson said that even if the council had the funds, it would be unlikely that the facility would be in Winchester, considering the opening of the new leisure centre at Bar End and the swimming facilities there. The council's town forum has established an outdoor swimming group, which is looking at ways that access can be given for people to swim in the city's rivers.
High Street retail space bought. An investment company has purchased a prominent Winchester High Street retail space for close to £2 million. Winchester-based Gentian Developments, who have investments across the UK, has completed the purchase of 28 High Street for £1.8 million from a Jersey-based company. This 3,250 square foot building is part of Gentian's ongoing investment into Winchester's retail offering. The basement, ground floor and part of the first floor of the property are leased until 2028 to popular British lifestyle brand Fatface. The vacant 1,560 square foot space on the first and second floors will be refurbished by Gentian. Gentian Developments made three other acquisitions on Winchester High Street in 2021. Their town centre regeneration portfolio now comprises 126 High Street, currently leased to Mountain Warehouse, 46 High Street, currently leased to Sea Salt, and 7 and 8 High Street, which is currently leased to Closs and Hamblin and Rick Stein's Seafood Restaurant. These significant historic and attractive buildings are now locally owned and maintained. Property Director for Gentian Developments, Alex Hurst, said, "This fourth purchase on Winchester's High Street shows our continued commitment and confidence in the city's retail offering and future. We have a vested interest to ensure our local High Street is an attractive place that people want to visit."
Remembering Ray of Sunshine, Zach. Zach died in December. A heartbroken family have spoken of their love for their special little boy after he died suddenly just a few weeks before his third birthday. Zach Kay from Swanmore died suddenly on December the 8th. He had been diagnosed with Down syndrome and Hirschsprung's disease shortly after birth. Now his family are raising money for Portsmouth Down Syndrome Association, PDSA. Mum Caroline said, "Zach would brighten the darkest of days. He was an absolute ray of sunshine and always had a smile on his face. He loved his cuddles and kisses and just lived his life in the best possible way. His Down syndrome was a wonderful part of who he was. It made him kind, empathetic and extra loving. But in general, he was just like any other three-year-old. Zach made the world a better and happier place. He made people see difference in a new light. Caroline, Dad Vince, Sister Freya 10 and Brother Matthew 8 say they have been overwhelmed by the support they have received. They have now raised nearly £3,000. Caroline said, "No parent should ever have to go through this awful nightmare, but sadly we have. One amazing thing that has come out of it is the wonderful fundraising that has been done in Zach's memory. We have been astounded by the generosity of our friends and family, and even those we don't know who have donated." It was on Zach's second birthday when the family contacted Portsmouth Down Syndrome Association for support. From the start, the family say they were welcomed. Due to COVID, they were not able to meet many people in person, but were provided with twice monthly sessions to help prepare Zach for school. Caroline said the support meant so much to them. She said, "This is what the PDSA do so well. They support people with Down syndrome to enable them to lead fulfilling lives. Zach absolutely loved his sessions. He concentrated on what he was being asked to do and loved to cause happy chaos during the sessions." Now, there is a photograph of Zach with his brother and sister, and in fact, they do look a very happy trio. Now, there is a way to donate to Zach's fund. It is quite complicated, so I'll read it to you very carefully. To donate, go to justgiving.com/fundraising/Caroline-K1. And the name K is spelt K-E-A-Y-1.
And here's a delightful little article about some street art that has just popped up. A new piece of artwork has popped up in Winchester city centre from street artist Hen Dog. The anonymous artist has produced a new mural featuring a young girl picking petals of a flower in Market Street. Hen Dog is behind a collection of murals across Winchester, including the mural of big issue seller Kev Colick at the bus station, a boy outside the community food pantry, a nurse and a boy outside Royal Hampshire County Hospital, and a boy flying a kite near the Handlebar Cafe off Garnier Road. He is also behind the Lego Boy piece in St Thomas Street and a mural at the Railway Inn in Winchester to commemorate the life of Simon Den Goodwin. Over the summer, he produced 9 murals across the county, each created to say thank you or to spread awareness, including a boy on the side of the shack at Hillhead, a boy blowing bubbles at Places Leisure Centre in Eastleigh, and a turtle at Royal Victoria Country Park near Southampton. People have compared his work to the mysterious street artist Banksy, although there is no connection. Winchester residents have been largely welcoming of his contributions to the city. City residents Val and Terry Wilson were admiring the new work last Friday. Val said, "I think it is very pretty. Whoever is behind it is obviously very talented. It's marvellous." And there's a lovely photograph of a little girl of around 3, I would think, in a summer dress with a big golden globe behind her on the wall. And she has a chubby little fist clutching a big, big flower. And she's looking at it as she's just picking off one of the petals. And it's signed Hen Dog.
Family recordings inspire new book. The chance finding of some old recordings have inspired a new book, partly set in Winchester and Itchen Abbas. When the Planes Flew Over by Natalie Cayley was written thanks to the story she was told by family members and a neighbour about their memories of World War II. Natalie, who lives in Chandler's Ford, said, "One New Year's Eve, 2018, I was rummaging through a drawer and found an old dictaphone where I had recorded my nan, my granddad's, my great auntie and a neighbour who used to live next door to us. When I found the dictaphone, I put a couple of AAA batteries in and it still worked. I thought the recordings would be lost. It was the year my nan passed away, so it was really nice to hear her voice again. I promised to write the story the following year, 2019. In August last year, I finished it and self-published it. The characters in the book are my nan, my two granddads, my great-auntie and my next-door neighbour. My nan and great-auntie are sisters from Winchester, and one of my granddads was based in the midst of the Southampton Blitz. My other granddad had a more countryside perspective of the war in Itchenabbas, and he remembers the Canadian soldiers coming over. My neighbour lived in a very small village called Longwood. There were a couple of evacuees that were sent in her direction, so she remembers a lot about that. When the Planes Flew Over is the first book in a trilogy Natalie is writing, with each instalment focusing on a different part of World War II. Natalie said, "There was so much information that I decided to write three books. My first book focuses on the first 2 years of World War II from their memory. It wasn't something I really intended to do, it was just something that came to me. I wanted to do it for the people that gave me their time to tell me their stories. The stories were too good not to share, and I'm hoping that someday I can share them with my children. I'm hoping I can finish the second book by the end of this year." The official launch of the book is taking place on January the 27th at P&G Wells in Winchester. Natalie will be there to talk about the book, sign copies and read out some chapters. She said, "P&G Wells was a bookstore my mum used to work at when I was a little girl. I used to spend the summer holidays in the children's section reading the recent Roald Dahl releases. It means a lot that my book is now on the shelf in the same store." And there's a picture accompanying this of a smiling Natalie showing the front cover of her new book, When the Planes Flew Over.
Lolo Zara is close to end of adventure. The planned finish to the journey of a former St. Swithin student to fly around the world solo has been delayed. Zara Rutherford, 19, was due to arrive back at Kortrijk in Belgium on Monday, but was delayed due to poor weather. After stops in Bulgaria, Slovakia, Zara arrived in the Czech Republic on Sunday, January the 16th. However, she couldn't make it to the country's capital, Prague, due to heavy fog. On her journey's Facebook page, Fly Solo, Zara said, "One small step closer to home today. Didn't quite make it into Prague due to fog. It was a short 1 hour flight to Benisov, where I landed on a grass runway for the first time in a while. The plan was then to travel the last leg to Kortrijk, which was where she began her journey on August the 18th last year. However, on her Facebook page, Zara said, "Not flying today. Weather is no good. We'll let you know when I leave."
And now a short item that sounds like fun, and it's headed Families Needed. Presenter Nick Knowles is back with a second series of Nick Knowles's Big House Clear Out, and he's offering Hampshire's most cluttered families a once-in-a-lifetime deal. Contestants are given the choice to completely declutter their house in return for a home of their dreams with a makeover from top to bottom. The Channel 5 show is set to air this year, so if your home is full of clutter, Nick Knowles and his team will transform your cluttered rooms into something truly special. To apply for the show, email home@viacomstudiosuk, and that's all one word run together, .com.
Hedge trimmer attacks rider of pavement scooter. An e-scooter rider was attacked by a man trimming a hedge in Winchester. At just after 9 a.m. on January the 9th, the 34-year-old victim was on Stockbridge Road, full flood. He saw a man at the side of the road cutting back a hedge, so he slowed and pedalled the scooter as he went past him. The man then challenged the victim over his use of an e-scooter, pushing him in the chest repeatedly with a pair of gardening secateurs while shouting at him. The victim then began filming the man, at which point he walked away. He was left with a small superficial wound to his chest, which required hospital treatment. The man police want to speak to is described as white, aged 50 to 60, around 5 foot 10 inches, average build, with short white hair. Sergeant Guy Drury, who is leading the investigation, said, "We recognise that the use of private e-scooters is not permitted on public land, and we have spoken to the victim about this. But it is not acceptable for anyone to be treated in this manner, so we are asking the public to help us identify this man. We take all reports of assault seriously and will do all we can to support victims."
Winchester bake sale raises over £600. Trustees, volunteers and friends of Home Start Winchester cooked up a storm to raise funds for the family support charity this month. The team hired a space in St Maurice's Covert in Winchester's High Street and whisked up cakes by the dozen to tempt shoppers to buy, raising £670. Dundee cake and mince pies were popular, and cakes of every size, shape and flavour were eagerly snapped up, and the groaning tables were empty by lunchtime. The delicious sponges, lemon drizzles, shortbread, cookies, cupcakes, flapjacks, loaves and gluten-free offerings would have put the bake-off contestants to shame. "We're always thinking of new ways to fundraise," said event organiser Chrissy Barlow. "We can't thank our home bakers enough for giving so generously, and to the public who gave donations as well as snapping up the cakes. Christmas has been a particularly difficult time for families who are struggling to cope, and the funds we raise will go towards making sure our families don't go without support in the new year. Home Start Winchester provide friendship, emotional and practical help to families in and around the city. They support families who are experiencing a wide range of difficulties, such as mental health issues, low self-esteem, isolation, or lack of parenting skills."
Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front of the wallet, and return it as soon as possible. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, Sue Ganaway, Angie Ling, Jane Thomas and Val Hoskins, and of course, many thanks to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Frieda Bates.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening, and until next time, goodbye and have a great week.